horses are on the track.
Every night on this show, we establish that the Trump administration is full of corrupt, self-dealing con artists who lie pathologically about virtually everything, even the dumbest things. You know, things like hurricane maps. Well, on Friday, we got another example of the Trump administration's war on the truth when the vice president,
Mike Pounds,
told a weird story about a Triple Crown-winning horse biting him.
Vice President
Mike Pounds
reveals Triple Crown winner American Pharoah bit him on the arm.
Mike Pounds
told the story during a policy retreat today for House Republicans in Baltimore. He says he was helping campaign for Congressman Andy Barr last year when the two were invited to see the prize-winning horse in Lexington.
Andy and I were standing there posing for all the cameras. An American Pharoah bit me so hard on the arm, I almost collapsed.
That's right.
Mike Pounds
claims American Pharoah bit him. This is the biggest political scandal involving a horse since Secretariat took a dump on Richard Nixon's desk.
Mike Pounds.
Great! Or, so he said. The story got laughs. That should have been the end of it. And yet, as we have learned with this administration over and over and over again, nothing, not even the smallest, most inconsequential equine details can be trusted. Because now, even the story about getting bit by a horse is being questioned by the horse's manager. Who said, quote, if he gave someone a nasty bite, I'd know it, adding that such behavior would be unexpected from a sweet horse. Well, who are you gonna believe? The vice president of the United States or a horse manager? Seriously, I'm asking. I do not know who to believe in this situation, but I'm definitely not inclined to side with these guys because they lie about everything, and you have to ask yourself if they're willing to lie about something as dumb as a weather forecast or an interaction with a horse, what else are they lying about?
The horses are on the track. They've been doing it down at the zoo, and I can show you.
On Saturday, a major oil processing facility in Saudi Arabia was knocked out by multiple drone strikes. Responsibility was immediately taken by Houthi rebels. These Houthi rebels are in Yemen. So we're going to bomb Iran. Or not. Our top intelligence officials think Iran did it. And so does our top unintelligence official, Donald Trump. Who tweeted, Saudi Arabia oil supply was attacked. There is reason to believe that we know the culprit are locked and loaded, depending on verification.
Over the weekend, Trump lashed out at media reports that he was willing to meet with Iran's president after he ripped up the Obama-era nuclear deal with Iran.
The president tweeting, the fake news is saying that I am willing to meet with Iran, no conditions. That is an incorrect statement, as usual.
Okay, first of all, no one thought you'd meet with no conditions, because for one thing, you definitely have several diagnosable conditions. Even if it was a meeting with the president of France, it would have conditions there, you know, like narcissistic personality disorder. Second, why does he always throw in some weird parenthetical, as usual? He talks about the media like a sitcom wife complaining about her idiot husband. Kevin's watching the game with his buddies while I'm stuck chasing the kids around and making dinner. As usual.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is ready to talk to Iran with no preconditions.
We're prepared to engage in a conversation with no preconditions.
Now, the president has made clear he's happy to take a meeting with no preconditions.
So, Secretary Pompeo, for clarity on this, can you foresee a meeting between President Trump and the Iranian leader later this month surrounding the United Nations?
Sure.
Would the president support that, and do you support that actively?
The president's made very clear he's prepared to meet with no preconditions.
Oh, my God. The fake news is coming from inside the house. As usual.
The fake news is saying that I am willing to meet with Iran, no conditions. That is an incorrect statement, as usual. Where would the fake news get an idea like that?
Do you have preconditions for that meeting?
No preconditions, no. They want to meet, I'll meet. Anytime they want. Anytime they want. It's good for the country, good for them, good for us, and good for the world. No preconditions.
Preconditioner by Matrix Biolage for that toxic orange glow.
You want to talk good, otherwise you can have a bad economy
no
for the next 3 years. Not as far as I'm concerned. No preconditions.
Chuck Todd goes out of his way to lock Trump into his comment of no preconditions. It's as if he knows Trump is a week away from him denying it. And you're not going to leave this interview and immediately say this is fake news. Absolutely not. Because I see you have Twitter open on your phone. You're not tweeting that right now, are you? Absolutely not. How many K's in the word fake?
Waiting to hear from the kingdom as to who they believe was the cause of this attack and under what terms we would proceed.
Oh, I keep forgetting that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman now tells the U.S. president who to attack and how. It's, of course, all part of Trump Hotel Rewards program. Rent 500 rooms, get a free war.
I don't want war with anybody. I'm somebody that would like not to have war. We have the strongest military in the world. We have the best equipment in the world. We have the best missiles. But no, I don't want war with anybody.
I'm gonna take you to, I'm gonna take you to, I'm gonna take you to part two.
The United States is more prepared than any country in the history of in any history.
Trump keeps waffling between confrontation with Iran and deal-making with Iran. It's pretty simple. He doesn't know anything about any of this. He has no actual worldview. He doesn't know what he wants. Sometimes he claims to be against Middle East wars. Other times he takes orders from the dictators he's friendly with, like in this case, Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Trump is so close to MBS and so proud of our arms sales to Saudi Arabia that when they met last year in the Oval Office, Trump literally showed off giant posters of the weapons he was selling to the kingdom.
We've become very good friends over a fairly short period of time. I was in Saudi Arabia in May, and we are bringing back hundreds of billions of dollars into the United States. If you look in terms of dollars, $3 billion, $533 million, $525 million, $6 billion, that's for frigates. $889 million, $63 million. That system, $13 billion. The C-130 airplanes, the Hercules, great plane, $3.8 billion. The Bradley vehicles, that's the tanks, $1.2 billion.
He's selling billions of dollars in weapons to a tyrannical regime, and he's acting like he's showing him the menu at a restaurant.
If you look over here, you'll see tonight's special. We got the Bradley tanks. Those are fresh. They just came in. The Hercules airplanes, 2-for-1. And, of course, our house specialty, the pomfrigates. Do you want some pomfrigates for the table to share while you wait?
Now, the reason Trump is suddenly backpedaling on his outreach to Iran is that Saudi Arabia and Iran are rivals who are engaged in a bunch of proxy wars, and Saudi Arabia wants America's help in that conflict. So last night, Trump threatened an illegal and unconstitutional war with Iran on where else? Twitter.
Saudi Arabia oil supply was attacked. There is reason to believe that we know the culprit, are locked and loaded depending on verification, but are waiting to hear from the kingdom as to who they believe was the cause of this attack and under what terms we would proceed.
Think about how insane this is. The president of the United States, the guy who spent the entire campaign falsely claiming he wanted to stay out of the Middle East and would put America first, just threatened a war with Iran on Twitter and said he was waiting for Saudi Arabia to tell him what to do. I never thought I'd say this, but someone needs to let American Pharaoh loose in the Oval Office. He doesn't even need to bite Trump. Just chase him around for a while. Keep him distracted.
Mike Pounds. Mike Pounds.
This is the one you want.
Mike Pounds.
Dragging you out.
And let's not forget, we also have no idea what Trump's personal financial motivations are here when it comes to Saudi Arabia. So far, all we do know is that Trump registered 8 companies in Saudi Arabia during the 2016 campaign. Saudi lobbyists spent $270,000 at Trump's hotel in December 2016. A visit from Saudi officials to Trump's international hotel in New York City helped boost the hotel's quarterly revenue by 13% in 2018's first quarter. King of Saudi Arabia touched that weird glowing orb during a trip to Riyadh in 2017. Where it's possible, they Freaky Friday. Now look, it is always hard, almost impossible to prove body swapping, but think of how well Donald Trump has treated Saudi Arabia post-orb. Of course, if the king is in Trump's body, then that means Trump is inside the king's body.
Since an attack on Saudi oil refineries that the Saudis blame on Iran. So far, Trump has declined to order military action in response, which Senator Lindsey Graham called a sign of weakness. But Trump pointed out, nah.
I actually think it's a sign of strength. We have the strongest military in the world now, and I think it's a great sign of strength. It's very easy to attack, and you know, there's plenty of time to do some dastardly things.
I don't. What? Dastardly. Look, I'm not saying attacking Iran is the right thing to do, but I have never heard the commander-in-chief call U.S. military action dastardly. Dastardly is how you describe a villain in a 1930s two-reeler. You must bomb Iran.
I can't bomb Iran.
You must bomb Iran.
I can't bomb Iran.
I'll bomb Iran.
My hero.
Curses. He's the greatest negotiator of all time. Now. No, wait. She's still tied to the railroad track. Don't, Mr. President. Then Trump threatened that things, well, they could get serious.
Well, there are many options, as you know, Phil. There are many options, and there's the ultimate option, and there are options a lot less than that.
You say the ultimate option? Are you talking
about? No, I'm saying the ultimate option, meaning go in war. No, I'm not talking about that ultimate option.
Okay, but by definition, there can be only one ultimate option. There could be an alternate option, but there can't be an alternate ultimate option. What does Trump think the other ultimate option is?
It's either go to war
or the ultimate option.
This is why we can't take anything Trump and his aides say at face value. They lie about the smallest things, like horses, to the biggest things, like war. They constantly contradict themselves and each other, and we have no idea what their hidden financial interests are. They lie and enrich themselves while the rest of us run around and try to hold them accountable.
As usual.
This was not an impeachment proceeding. It was an impeachment investigation, which is different. The Democrats still aren't fully on board with impeachment because they know that no matter what happens in the House, Trump will be saved by the Republican Senate. So a lot of them say, what's the point? Well, this is the point. A move to impeach Donald Trump would go on for months. This would be hours and hours of hearings and televised testimony, all for our couch potato president to take in. He'll be so busy watching and tweeting about it that just maybe he'll forget all the other terrible things he wants to do. Impeachment is a good way to distract Donald Trump with the subject he cares about most, which is Donald Trump. Basically, our president is an unruly child throwing a tantrum while we try to eat dinner at a restaurant, and impeachment is an iPad loaded with Paw Patrol. So I say send in Ryder and his team of pups and let's see what happens.
Democrats who already favor impeachment have a grab bag of potentially impeachment offenses to choose from. There's the obstruction of justice that was laid out clearly in the Mueller report. Trump's pattern of self-enrichment using the office of the presidency. Trump's status as the unindicted co-conspirator in the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels, which are part of the reason his former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, sits in prison to this day. The Trump administration defying congressional subpoenas, his dangling of pardons, and his racist language, like those that experts have said help incite white nationalist violence, and also the go back comments that Trump tweeted at four freshman Democrats who are all U.S. citizens, remarks listed by Texas Congressman Al Green, an impeachment supporter, as grounds for impeaching Trump.
Have a great weekend. The president makes such a thing possible for us all. Good night from New York.
Thanks for the song this week from
Leslie Gore,
Big
Audio, Dynamite, Nicholas Brittal, Golden Earring,
and thanks to
Sarah Sanders, Rudy Giuliani, Lou Dobbs,
Jimmy
Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers,
Chris
Hayes, Don Lemon, Gregory Cheadle,
and
Chuck Todd.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
The way I understand it, this person came into your home and stole all of your radios.
Every radio I had to my name.
Including transistors?
Yes. Well, he left me one earplug. I'll say that for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, did he take anything else?
Just the radios. And a couple of pieces of fruit.
I see. Well, what...
A banana and two Kadota figs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't deny him the fruit.
No. Are you and your husband going to replace the radios?
Well, we'll have to. Arthur is late for work because he has no radio to keep reminding him of the time and traffic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing to keep me company while I work around the house.
I can imagine.
We have a 10-room house. We had a radio in every room.
Then he stole all 10 radios?
11.
11.
He also stole the car.
Who listens to radio? Only 150 million people. That's all.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for all the magnificent colors of fall. I love the everyday subtle changes, all the colors from the goldenrod and purple aster flowers to shades of red, yellow, and orange leaves in the trees. Right now, in our part of north central Vermont, entire hillsides are changing just a little each day. Why do leaves change color? Small amounts of these colors have been in the leaves all along. We just can't see them in the summer because they are covered up by the green chlorophyll. As the days get shorter, the trees seem to know to begin getting ready for winter. During the colder months, there is not enough light or water for photosynthesis, for trees to make their own food. The trees are beginning to rest and live off food they stored during the summer, and the green chlorophyll slowly disappears from the leaves. With chlorophyll production winding down, previously unseen pigments appear. So much of the coloring is related to sunshine, or lack thereof. If late September and October are cloudy, leaves can go from green to yellow. Sunny days and cool nights, however, can generate reds, oranges, and purples. And the sugar maples rule the fall foliage here in Vermont. Depending on the proportion of sun and shade, they can change from yellow to red to orange. But don't just listen to this nature note. Go outside, take a deep breath, and witness the magnificent colors of fall.
Nature Note comes to you weekly from earthwalkvermont.org and Goddard College Community Radio.
Hello, everyone! Everyone make some noise, please! My name is Audrea Din, and I, along Sophie and Meher and Natalie Penna, have worked together to organize this strike today as part of a chapter of a global movement called Fridays for Future, or U.S. Youth Climate Strike. A couple things I want to mention before we start, that this is a carry-in, carry-out park, so make sure to take all your trash with you or dispose of it appropriately. So yeah, we're gonna get started with the rally, everybody. I was in middle school when I first learned about something called climate change. I remember wondering why, if there's something so disastrous that it threatened humanity's existence, why wasn't anything being done? Why do we still allow greenhouse gases to be emitted into the atmosphere? Just so huge corporations that account for 71% of these emissions can continue to make unimaginable amounts of money. For a long time, we thought, it's okay, it's in the far future, it won't ever affect us. But now, the science is saying differently. We have just 11 years to transform our energy system, reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, and prevent the worst effects of climate change. We are striking because our world leaders have yet to acknowledge, prioritize, or properly address our climate crisis. We are striking because marginalized communities across our nation, especially communities of color, disabled communities, and low-income communities, are already disproportionately impacted by climate change. More than half of the 9 million people living near hazardous waste sites are people of color, and Black Americans are 3 times more likely to die of air pollutants. Indigenous people have been fighting for the environment decades before even we did. Greta Thunberg said, "You say you love your children above all else, but you're stealing their future in front of their very eyes." It has become very evident that our politicians and world leaders do not care about their children. We are striking because if the social order is disrupted by our refusal to attend school, then the system is forced to face the climate crisis and enact change. Throughout history, the youth have been on the front lines of every movement fighting for justice, and will do it again for the determining factor, an issue of our generation. Thank you. Speaker is Sophie Swartz East. She's a climate activist from Avril Park High School.
Okay. Hi, I'm Sophie Schmatz-Eise. I'm 16, just starting my junior year of high school. And like all of you and other youths across the world, I know it's probably inevitable that we will ultimately suffer due to the consequences of climate change. That is, if we do not change course soon. Let me paint a picture for you all of our possible future. The world is gray, huge and unpredictable storms damage nations around the world on a regular basis. There's constant extreme heat in some places, making them uninhabitable. The heat causes mass migration from one area to another. People are on the move, looking for new places to live where food can still be grown. Many animals we have come to know as being part of this living planet are now gone. There are already some examples of this shifting. Hurricane Dorian recently destroyed the Bahamas. It was one of the most powerful Atlantic hurricanes on record, signifying that climate change will bring about slower moving and more intense hurricanes than we've seen before. Did you know that the Amazon rainforest is one of the world's best defenses against climate change because it takes on 1/4 of the world's CO2? Well, it's still burning because of the extreme droughts in South America, which are also directly linked back to climate change. The climate crisis is the biggest threat that we on this earth are currently facing, and it will continue to get worse for the rest of time that this planet exists if we continue down our current path. Many of you may have seen the digitally edited photos which depict what different cities or areas of the world will look like by the end of the century. Since 1900, our sea levels have risen 16 to 21 centimeters, and with global warming, new studies reveal an accelerating rise. I recently read a study that concluded that if all of the Earth's ice melted, ocean levels would rise 216 feet. The rising of sea levels would cause storm surge flooding, coastal erosion, and changes in water quality, which will ruin the lives of millions of people around the world. What will happen to our coastal cities when sea levels rise? Will places like Manhattan be wiped off the map completely? What will happen to the people living in the many low-lying areas across the planet? This is one of the greatest injustices the people of the world will face, and everyone will be affected. It doesn't matter if your country is poor and underdeveloped, or if it is wealthy, you will not be able to escape the prison of climate change. Now, to be fair, we don't all contribute to the problem equally, and those who have contributed the least, like those from low-income marginalized communities who live more simply, buy less, and don't drive cars, and the youth who haven't been on the planet long enough to make their own decisions about how they live, they will be the ones who suffer the most in the future. Essential. Essentials to life, such as air and water, are being destroyed by pollution and climate change, an issue that has never been treated as a crisis before.
has been ignored for so long, and leaders around the world have gotten away without doing anything to change it. But we will not let them. What will happen to humanity? The answer to this question in one word, catastrophe. I think I speak for all of us when I say that we need action. All of us, the youth and the adults together.
Hello, my name is Ginger Feldman from High and Mighty Therapeutic Riding and Driving Center, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Oh, honey, I just heard some terrible news.
What's that, honey?
The radio station WGXC is going off the air.
Oh, my goodness. Did you know you could donate by check? Give them a check to WGXC 5662 Route 23, Accra, New York, 12405.
And you can also go to their website, wavefarm.org or wgxc.org, and donate monthly, a sustaining supporter.
Oh, I'll be a sustaining supporter, honey, once we get up to that St. Charles Hotel.
Oh, yes, I love the bar there.
There's no bar there.
That's what I meant.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Setho of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Greta Thunberg, change is coming, whether you like it or not. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg has sparked a global movement with her school strike for the climate. Last year, she started skipping school Fridays to stand outside the Swedish parliament demanding climate action. Since then, she's inspired millions around the world to join her. The final two Fridays of this month, September 20th and 27th, are expected to be some of the largest global protests in history. These two strike days fall on either side of the United Nations Climate Action Summit on Monday, September 23rd. Organized during the UN's annual General Assembly meeting, which brings leaders from around the world to New York City, the Climate Action Summit aims to, quote, spark the transformation that's urgently needed and propel action that will benefit everyone. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres described the urgency of the moment this week.
July was the hottest month ever. These 5 years will be the hottest 5 years in record. We see the rising level of the ocean taking place, the highest concentrations ever of CO2 in the atmosphere. We need to go back 3 to 5 million years to get the same levels of CO2. And at that time, water level was 10 to 20 meters higher than what it is today. So we are really dealing with a very dramatic threat, not only to the future of the planet, but to the planet today.
Greta Thunberg arrived in New York City August 28th after a 2-week voyage aboard a zero-emissions high-speed sailboat. Since then, she's been on the go, joining youth school strikes at the United Nations and in front of the White House, giving scores of interviews and engaging with grassroots activists, politicians, and others to demand urgent action. On Monday night, in recognition for her work linking the climate emergency to human rights, Amnesty International gave her its 2019 Ambassador of Conscience Award.
Right now, I think there is an awakening going on. Even though it is slow, the pace is picking up and the debate is shifting. This is thanks to a lot of different reasons, but it is a lot because of countless of activists, and especially young activists. Activism works. So what I'm telling you to do now is to act, because no one is too small to make a difference. I'm urging all of you to take part in the global climate strikes on September 20th and 27th. And just one last thing. See you on the streets.
The Paris Climate Agreement, signed by almost every nation in 2015, was supposed to accelerate the transition from fossil fuels to renewables. President Donald Trump announced his intention to pull the United States out of the agreement on June 1, 2017, failing to note that the earliest date the U.S. could leave would be November 2020. That's why the Trump administration has been sending low-level officials to the annual UN climate summits, where they spend their time promoting coal and other fossil fuels while energetically avoiding questions from the press. Despite the Paris Agreement, the planet as a whole continues to burn more fossil fuels. In a report issued just over a week ago, the U.S. Energy Information Administration predicted global petroleum consumption for the first time ever would surpass 100 million barrels per day in 2019. The International Energy Agency stated recently, despite legitimate concerns about air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions, coal use will continue to be significant in the future, and that coal comprises 27% of all energy used worldwide and 38% of electricity generation, they said. The rapid transition away from fossil fuels to a fully renewable energy economy will require a cooperative global effort unprecedented in history. Several versions of this needed transformation for the United States have been articulated, first in the Green New Deal bill proposed by New York Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey. 2020 presidential hopeful Senator Bernie Sanders has put forth a $16.3 trillion plan that he says would create 20 million jobs and pay for itself within 15 years. His plan also promotes environmental justice. Quote, in a truly inclusive movement that prioritizes young people, workers, indigenous people, communities of color, and other historically marginalized groups, he said. Greta Thunberg's words from last December's UN climate summit in Katowice, Poland, bear repeating. The two-week ministerial meeting was almost over. The plenary schedule was running late. At close to midnight, Greta, then 15 years old, gave a short, powerful address. She rocked the hall. Her words quickly resonated around the world.
We have not come here to beg world leaders to care. You have ignored us in the past, and you will ignore us again. We have run out of excuses, and we are running out of time. We have come here to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power belongs to the people. Thank you.
On Tuesday, after sustained protests for several years, the University of California announced it's divesting its $84 billion pension and endowment funds of all fossil fuel investments. The storms that batter island nations from the Bahamas to the Philippines and coastal communities from Florida to Newfoundland are occurring with greater frequency and greater strength. In response, a rapidly growing global movement of climate activists led by youth is heating up as well. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
WGXE welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXE, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXE and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXE. 518-291-9492.
But right now, we're joined by Sylvia Hasenkopf, who is here. Hopefully it doesn't sound as bad to you all as it, it's gone out again. Hudson Valley historian Sylvia Hasenkopf, I'm going to let you talk a while I pull with some cables. There it goes. You're going to tell us about the Cairo Historical Society's annual Archival Day?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really fun day that we do every year. One of the things that's really important to us at the Cairo Historical Society is the collection, preservation, and sharing of our local history. And what people don't realize is that they have a lot of that history in their homes, even in their businesses. It's just things that are lying around in, you know, boxes and drawers and, you know, in the garage and so forth. And once a year we get together. This year it'll be on Saturday at the Carroll Public Library in the Soho Room between 10:30 and 1:30. We'll be there, and people that want to come in and they have an item they want to talk about, they have an item they'd like to donate, or they have an item they'd like us to take a picture of and scan and return to them, and we'll be there to talk with them about that. When people say, well, what is savable? What is local history? It could be just about anything. I mean, honestly, when you think about it, you have photos from Cairo. Some of them are old. Some of them are much more sooner. They're all history. Postcards, matchbook covers, letterhead.
I guess you're looking for pennants?
Pennants. We were looking for the Cairo and Acre pennants and any others. The only two I know that for sure existed in the town of Cairo was an Acre pennant, which we were gifted one by the Greene County historian, Dave Dorfelt. He actually gifted one. His family's from Acre. So we have one of those, but we don't have the Cairo one, which is a unique pennant in itself. It's nothing fancy. Just says Cairo, New York on it. And I believe it's green and red or something like that, or red and green. So anyways, we're looking for one of those. We also have received all kinds of different things from, we've received daguerreotypes, you know, the earliest photography, tintypes we've scanned. We've received maps. We've scanned family Bible pages. We've scanned deeds. In fact, one of the reasons I got into local history many, many moons ago is when I was doing my husband's genealogy, my stepchildren had asked me about their mom's genealogy, and she's a Lennon. So I said, okay, well, let's do that. So the kids and I went around to cemeteries.
She's not the Lennons in Cairo?
Yeah, the Lennons in Cairo and the Lennons in Catskill. They're related, actually. And so we started the adventure of trying to determine who their ancestors were. And as it turns out, it was a man named John Lennon. Yay, that was fun, trying to do a Google search on him.
Yeah.
So I had to do it the hard way, which is to dive through records. And so we spent a lot of time looking for the grave of John Lennon, who turns out to be, I believe, an Irishman who came over in maybe the 1750s.
Not from Liverpool.
You know, I really don't know if he's from Liverpool or from Ireland or
it's possible,
from...
Huh?
From Scotland, because in looking at, you know, Ancestry.com and the sites like that, it suggests that Lennon might be like a Scottish name rather than an English name, but along the border there. So he could have been a Scots Irish.
Yeah, and we're
person.
Making these jokes. It was spelled like John Lennon, not
exactly.
like the Russian
Who?
Not Lenin from
oh,
Russia.
No, not Lenin. Although I have to tell you, when you're doing primary research back in the day where spelling meant nothing, I have seen it spelt every which way under the sun, including L-E-N-I-N.
It makes Googling even more
yes,
difficult.
Yes, indeed. So which way under the sun, including L-E-N-I-N.
It makes Googling even more difficult.
Yes, indeed. So anyways, we spent a lot the archival day in Cairo, so we got images of that particular deed. It was really quite fun. Other things we received are the Barton Bells. The bells. People are going, well, okay, what's a bell? Okay, well, this was a sleigh bell. And
sounds like an a cappella singing.
I know. But we have the distinction in Cairo of the Barton Foundry was right along old 23B, now very close to where the Tiny Homes Resort is right now. And along that little creek, they made bells, and they were sleigh bells, and they were the first sleigh bells made in America. And they were made in Cairo.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? And we have a couple of those bells donated by some local people. So that was very exciting.
Did sleigh bells serve a purpose?
Yes.
Like
because you got to think.
Bears or something?
Well, no. Think about the sleighs going along in the winter, which is when sleighs were used. You can't hear anything. You can't hear the horses usually. You can't hear the sleigh. There's no noise. So it was to let people know to get out of the way of the sleigh.
It was an early car horn.
It was. And it just jingle, jingle, jingle. And they had these long leather straps across the breasts of the horses, and they had all the bells attached. So these Barton bells actually have JB on the reverse of them for John Barton. I think it's John Barton. So anyways, so they're on the back, and so you know right away that it's one of the bells made in Cairo. So we were donated a few of those, and so we have them, and that's pretty exciting to have in our collection. Some other things that we've had collected that are fun are some of the bottles from the bottling works that was in Cairo.
Where was that?
The White's Bottling Works is, we have two V's in Cairo. The first one's by the fountain, and the second V goes to the cemetery. So we have a big brick building there on the right as you're making that turn, and that's the George White Bottling Works. And so they bottled primarily soda, but they also, in other iterations, like, you know, there's other people that bought the place after George White, they made beer and so on. And there's
I was
going to
say, it looks like a good place for a brewery now.
Well, I hear that's what's going to happen there.
Ah, it's going to return to
I
form,
think
huh?
so. I've heard news that somebody's interested in creating a brewery at that site, which would be outstanding because apparently it has a really awesome well with really clear water, which in Cairo can be a little bit challenging because we're on rock, basically. But I'm waiting. I want to try it out myself. And it somehow, from a historical point of view, makes sense. You know,
right.
It's kind of
circling
like the circle turning around once more. We've had people come in with their family Bibles. Family Bibles are particularly important because, you know, New York was rather late in getting in the game of formal vital records. Our vital record system didn't start until 1882. And it took decades for it to really be 100% ironclad. A lot of people forgot to send them to the state. So family Bible records, when you're doing research, becomes incredibly important. Sometimes
people wrote their family history
the
births, in the Bible.
Deaths, marriages, and other notes sometimes are included there. And for many families, this is the only information they have about when their ancestor was born or married and who the father and the mother were. Sometimes the maiden name of the mother, it's the only place that you will find it will be in a family Bible record. So those are particularly important in preserving. And, of course, we don't need to have the Bible, but we sure as heck would love to take an image of it, include it in our family files. So that's, you know, something that we find really fun. I've had people, I have a pair of shoes, little leather boy shoes that are maybe a size 1, that were donated to us for someone that lived in Cairo in the 1860s. So that's pretty fun. We've had school items like a chalkboard. Every child didn't have paper back in the day because it was so expensive, but they did have chalk and a little chalkboard, and that's how they did their arithmetic and their numbers and their lettering. So that was gifted to us as well. I'm particularly fond of paper, ephemera. We've talked about that before. Ephemera is something that you use and dispose of right away. It could be matchbooks. It could be a letter. I love old letters. They capture what's going on in a family or in a business or a dispute. Sometimes it's the only clue we have. There was a dispute. So I love capturing that. Envelopes that have return addresses that were stamped on it from Caro, Round Top Pearling, you know, ACRA, those are all really important because sometimes they're the only proof that there was a business. You know, they weren't advertised the way we advertise today, so you don't necessarily have them in newspapers. Sometimes that envelope, that letterhead, the bill head from an invoice are the only way we know that business ever existed. So that helps to flesh out families for individuals who are interested in researching who their families were in Caro. You know, so there's a lot of different things that come in through the door. And sometimes people just come in and talk. They have a question about a site. They want a question about a photo or about a family. And so we have a great, you know, historical conversation. So we invite people to come on down. You know, if you have stuff in your closet or if you have stuff, you know, in the garage. We've had people donate signs to businesses, which is like Weeks General Store. Everybody knows Weeks General Store on Main Street in Caro. It was the place to go, you know, back in the mid 20th century. Mr. Weeks also had a barn in which he sold army surplus. So we have people that would go there and buy, you know, old helmets, old coats, old knapsacks, you know, that sort of stuff.
Which building was it in?
It was the one where, do you know where Susan True used to have her accounting offices? It's just been sold. There's going to be a bakery going in there. So let me think.
All kinds of news. You've got all the Caro business news.
Well, yeah. I live there. But it's kind of a long store. It's, I think, greenish. There is right in front of it. Let me see. It looks like there's two stores on each side, so you can actually have a two-store kind of thing. It's low. On the one side is the building that had a fire some years ago and was just rebuilt. I think it's about four or five down from the post office. Do you know which one
I
mean
now?
Yeah,
I know which one.
So that's the old Weeks place. So we do have his sign, believe it or not, that was donated to us, and we'll be able to hang at some point at the Historical Society. We also have had people donate their uniforms. I had somebody donate their blouse and apron from working up at the Winter Clove, which is kind of cool. We had people donate a full World War I uniform, and I mean, we're talking gas mask, their mess kit, the helmet, their shirt, their pants, the straps that they had, you know, in the old days, keep your socks up. So we have that in our collection.
You could have a great costume ball with all these.
Well, you know, one of these days, I think it'd be really fun if we had all the uniforms from the different periods, you know. So we do have people who have promised to donate stuff once we have the building open. Although I already have things, you know, in containers that will be away from bugs and so on, waiting for the day that we actually open our headquarters site. So there's a lot of different things that we're doing. Again, it's on Saturday. The 21st of September between 10:30 and 1:30 at the Caro Public Library on Railroad Ave. And come on down. We'd love to see you.
It's a little like Antiques Roadshow, I guess.
It is.
You could just come if you don't have anything, but you just want to see what comes in.
Yes. And we sometimes sit and chat with people for quite a long time about different things. And you know, people come in through the door. I mean, the first year we had like 40 people lined up. Now, we don't have that anymore, so there's not that kind of wait as the first year. It's a steady flow for the 3 hours that we're there, and we've had some amazing items come in that have led to great articles in the Caro Herald, which is, you know, our quarterly publication of the Caro Historical Society that members receive. So very fun stuff. All this, of course, will eventually end up in our headquarters, which is moving along great. We finally were able to raise the final dollars we needed to get our windows and doors. We were short $314.63 when we finally went in and got the quote. And I went out to our Facebook friends, and within half an hour, we had the monies we needed in order to get the windows and doors and the screen doors for our building. So they're on order. And we've moved forward now with also getting electricity to the building. So we're going to get Central Hudson to string a line over. And our favorite electrician, Michael Holdridge, a Caro native, is going to come and actually put up the exterior meter reader and some temporary internal, not switches, but outlets so that we can actually use equipment. And then he'll come in at a later date and install the panel box once we have all our walls up and everything else is figured out. So the next big campaign in the fall will undoubtedly be our HVAC system, which is really important for an archival facility. So we are looking to partner with, you know, a plumber that would be interested in donating services and getting a whole lot of profile from us to get, you know, our building up and running. We're getting there slowly but surely. Very exciting.
It's coming along, yes.
It definitely is. Well, some other Caro news. We've got a lot of things going on at the Caro Historical Society this month. On Thursday night, Richie Obock is going to give us a talk about his time as a teenager and young man going up to his family's resort, Eva's Farm in Perling. His grandmother, Eva St. Eve, and her husband, George, and a partner is what you call him, bought some land in Perling in the late 1930s. It was an old hunting camp, and they converted it into a thriving German-American resort that ran for over 50 years. And Richie would come up every summer and spend his summers roaming Perling and Round Top and, you know, doing all the wonderful things kids do in the summers up here. And he's going to share all those great memories with us at the Caro Public Library on Thursday at 7 o'clock. So we invite everybody to come on down and listen to local history from those who lived it.
Because that was kind of the glory years of Round Top, right?
Oh, it was. I mean, the resort industry went crazy in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and early 70s. This is the heyday of the resort industry. In living memory. I mean, certainly we've been doing the resort industry in Caro since the 1880s. In fact, the Bavarian Manor in its first iteration as the White Sulphur Springs came to be in 1865, 1866, somewhere in there. So people coming up from the city to get fresh air and farm produce is not really a new idea. It's something that they were doing, you know, well over 150 years ago.
I guess just in the 40s, because the war ended, there's all kinds of people coming back and and becoming middle class and starting families. And
well, what changed is in the early years of the resort industry, people took the dayliners to come up, and they would be met, you know, either in Catskill, or if they wanted, they could take the train into Caro until about the early 1900s and be met there by cars or buggies that would take them up to the resorts. As we got into the 20s, and that was the Depression years, and they were tough times all the way around. Not that many people had the money to be able to come up to the resorts. But certainly by the 30s, after the war, things started to kick up again. And what changed after the war is that we ended up getting the roads. The roads that were needed to really transverse the entire country. We had the interstate highways,
right? Eisenhower.
Yeah, Eisenhower. Everybody had this new wealth because there were jobs everywhere. So the middle class was powerful. It had money. It had extra money. Everybody did their vacations. And where did they go? They came to the Catskills. If you lived in the city, if you lived in New Jersey, Long Island, you came up to the Catskills for the most part because it was only a few hours away, even by car. Now, we drive a lot faster than they did back then. So they usually would take 3 hours or so on the small back roads, 3 to 4 hours to get up here. But nonetheless, that was still pretty close for them. And a lot of times families would come up for the whole summer. The dads would keep working. They would get their families into a resort. They would stay the whole summer. And they would come back to the same resort year after year after year. They were very loyal. So Richie's family experienced that. They had the opportunity to know their clientele well. They were not just clients. They were friends. He has wonderful stories of growing up in that environment as a kid and just the great things that they did. And he's going to share how that all came to be and how, you know, Eva's Farm grew from just a tiny little one room, one building, you know, establishment into a multi-building establishment. And, you know, the food they cooked, the things they did, and so on and so forth. So that'll be this Thursday. And also, very excited on Thursday, we're going to launch our new raffle. And it will be the 1867 map of the town of Caro, which we have enlarged to 20 inches by 26 inches. Was framed by White Mule Framing right across the street from here at no charge to us. Many thanks to both Anne and Janosch for doing that for us. They did an absolutely stunning job. Beautiful map. It's in full color. It's a high-quality G-clay print. And we will be raffling off this map. You know, it's framed, it's ready to go, and hang up on your wall. So we were going to present it. So come on down. We will have